Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Those who care about the Earth have consistently stood united in our efforts to provide our voices and our bodies to stand up and speak out on behalf of reestablishing a new world order that integrates sun and wind and waves with the beauty of our open spaces and wild places into a cohesive strategy for a sustainable and self-sufficient future. But whereas the vision seemed clear for so long, things are popping up on the horizon that are creating some warring factions within our own community. It's time to take a look within the ranks, and we do when your Voice of the Earth continues. Stay tuned. Next week, I'm planning on covering an emerging story in the ongoing saga of the evolution of human life on Earth, namely, the battle in the environmental movement between advocates of biofuels and an expanding chorus telling us, no, don't do that, because biofuels are fueling a massive destruction of rainforests in Brazil, jungles in Malaysia, food crops in the U.S., and this is going to get very interesting before it's over. And thinking about that story made me think about what I believe will be a whole slew of environmental activist wars waged between environmentalists whose passions to do the right thing could get somewhat ugly. And we need to begin to talk about this, because if we don't, this will make the internecine arm wrestling between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama seem like a game of patty cake. Today, I'm going to outline some of these green-on-green war zones. In our purest forms, environmentalists are driven by a compassion for human values that literally feel the living systems, landscapes, wildernesses, shores, packs and tribes and schools of animals, which are at the foundation of life itself. We feel that vistas, the sounds of nature, the spirit of the wild creatures, have a sacred right to exist. And most of us find pleasure, joy, and meaning every time we experience a connection with the wild earth. Many of us as well have a wide-reaching sense of connection to this wonder that easily stretches out far beyond our own backyard. Although most of us will never actually see a whale swimming freely in the ocean, we hold that image as sacred in our sense of wonder. And we become easily incensed at other humans who show such gross human insensitivities or drives for riches and power at the expense of those things we value. It's true of almost every human, but nature is our focus. But things have changed through time. The issues and the passions have grown more volatile, and it's all happened within our lifetime, and it's due almost entirely to the change in belief that nature was bountiful and limitless, to the realization that nature is complex, interdependent, and does have limits. And that we humans were not only intimately tied into these constraints, but ironically were actively involved in the destruction of the system upon which we rely for our very existence. And with that realization, the spirit of the environmental movement was born. But that spirit ran headlong into the mass of an ever-expanding machinery of commerce and capital that for most held the most immediate control of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And these two great spirits began to arm wrestle. But the game wasn't fair, because the power of commerce and capital had an enormous advantage. They could acquire great power by accumulating wealth, which in reality has no inherent real value. It could be consolidated into the hands of a few. Nature, on the other hand, could not be concentrated. One could not consolidate a great wilderness inside a bank vault. So a new form of power had to be developed to effectively parry with power of capital, and it came in the form of legislation. And with that, the environmental movement was born. We've been celebrating a series of anniversaries recently, the 40th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, the 40th anniversary of Earth Day. We've been at this for a very long time. This new system of power sharing developed with a unique system for deciding winners and losers, and it was based on scientific rules of evidence. Protections were established based on numbers. Numbers of wolves, numbers of owls, numbers of darters, and numbers of salmon. And scientific numbers had to be backed up with good science, which thankfully provided steady work for thousands of biologists, oceanographers, climatologists, and population ecologists. And that is, to this day, how and where the battles are fought. But the battle of numbers has two sides. And when the scales tip ever so slightly to the side of significant enough abundance, the wheels of commerce begin again. We're witnessing this most painfully as Alaska is opening up the wolf population to all sorts of taking, shooting, trap lines, aerial slaughter, because the courts have ruled that there were now a sustainable number of wolves. And so wolves are being killed every day. Japan continues its forays into the Arctic whale sanctuary with the justification that their taking will not bring any whale species to that tipping point. No need to factor in any other data, because things like the sentience of animals cannot be quantified. Genetically modified crops get a pass because it has been proven that they do indeed result in greater numbers of bushels per acre than previous seed lines. And on the backside of the science arguments, neonicotinoids do continue to be used as insecticides because no one can prove that the loss of memory in bees is enough to be the cause of colony collapse disorder, so bees continue to just disappear. But the battles are about to change and go inward as this war of numbers becomes the battleground of competing environmental interests. The environmental movement is subject to the same foibles, unfortunately, as those we often criticize. Whereas the early environmentalists championed simplicity, a rejection of the glamour of showy lifestyles and economic arrogance, we have come to a place where green at any cost is fashionable. It's the whole foods paradox. We have found it extremely useful to embrace a showcase of celebrities who assign their names to the newest green causes and stuff. We hold sacred certain things. Wind equals good. Solar, good. Biofuels, good. Green is good. But this Hollywoodization of environmentalism will likely engender some amazingly passionate battle zones between different environmental factions. Where will they lead? It's happening already. One of the premier examples was with wind systems. Wind energy began with small wind generators powering remote houses and ranches. It was a symbol of self-sufficiency. Slowly, the idea grew that wind could be, in fact, an alternative energy. And yes, indeed, it can. And with this growing acceptance grew larger dreams, which led to greater visions of wind as a provider of greater and greater portions of our energy needs. And as oil prices began their free ride to the $100 a barrel, so too did energy costs, and our desire to free ourselves from the monsters of oil, and now the specter of global warming. Wind as energy grew in stature and size, it began to represent the good green alternative. And wind generators turned to wind farms, and the farms to compete needed to produce more power per square foot to justify their place in the energy equations. And the numbers said bigger was better. And we were all dazzled by the emergence of large wind towers, big, filling whole hillsides. But big wasn't big enough to get the numbers right. They should and would and were made into giants, 200-foot blades, 300-foot blades, the size of twirling football fields, which once set into motion. There was no stopping these giants. But they were wind, and wind was good on a Hollywood scale. And then the proposals came in from some of our giant green celebs to mount our army of behemoth wind gatherers off the coast of Boston as a shrine to making a big difference and set records for the number of homes that would be powered and the triumph of good over the evils of oil. And then some old environmentalist said, "Hey, wait. I fought the blight of offshore oil rigs polluting the beauty and the wonder of my views of sunsets. Those are a blight on the sacred wonder of the spirit to meditate and feel connected. And now every child in Boston will never know what that wonder was." It was not a pretty thing, seeing the iconic green giants arguing in public and fueling the right wing's arsenal of insults against the left-wing environmental wackos. Ha, 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 ha. There is a lesson there somewhere that speaks to limits and perspectives. But I fear there are more public battles to come, and there is one emerging as we speak that will get much worse before it gets better, and that is the upcoming biofuel wars. As with the wind wars, the biofuels began a long time ago when it was discovered that cars would run reasonably well if you mixed up to 10% ethanol with gas. ethanol could be made from corn. I was living in Minnesota when this was discovered, and those corn farmers all shook their heads and said, "You betcha, that's a good idea." And Minnesota authorized the use of ethanol and gasoline. We felt good about that because it helped our farmers and was good for the environment. And just like the wind story, ethanol and gas spread out across the land, and it too became part of something much bigger: homegrown energy, self-reliance, standing up to the oil companies. And then it became a biofuel, a renewable wonder, and it was caught up and pushed forward on the tidal wave of reducing our greenhouse gases and was brought into the emerging green cap-and-trade economic stimulus packages. The oil companies bought in. George Bush dropped it in his State of the Union address. Every available grain silo was now a symbol of rejuvenation of the heartland. Soybean fields were replanted in corn. Corn became the new yellow good. And magically, all around the world, the promise of the biofuels revolution swept through the Third World. And in a massive environmental coup, whole jungles of the Amazon were leveled and turned into biofuel factories. And then some old environmentalist said, "Wait! 10 years ago, I was standing in front of armies of yellow caterpillars that were tearing down the jungles of Brazil to feed hamburgers to overweight kids at McDonald's in Shreveport, Schenectady, and Scranton. Excuse me, it's the same jungle. Only the color of the caterpillars has changed to green. And besides, aren't you shooting yourself in the face, tearing down the world's most effective carbon sequestration systems in order to help lower CO2 emissions with corn ethanol?" And then a riot breaks out in Mexico by peasants protesting the rising cost of corn tortillas. And visions of America's precious native grass prairies being turned into sweet grass factories welled great diamonds of tears, which fell from the eyes of an old balladeer who sang songs to the great prairies to inspire their preservation. There's a lesson here, too. More than one, really. And it has to do with getting back to the basics of an environmental movement tied to the earth rather than cap-and-trade credits, becoming part of an elite eco-traveling circus of tourists, proving our commitment to the environment by how much we're willing to spend on designer foods, shoes, and itsy-bitsy expensive cars. Unfortunately, these all help to create and perpetuate the higher price of life. And right now, it's time we economize. We need to incorporate simpler solutions everywhere. Will it happen? There's a turn in the road ahead. And which way we travel will make all the difference.
'Tis the gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free, 'tis the gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we are in the place just right, we'll be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend we will not be ashamed. To turn, 'twill be our delight, till by turning, turning we come round, round.
This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next Tuesday or any time on the archives. When your voice sings off across the great native grass prairies, here on the Wild Side News. Thank you.